Today, scientists announced a milestone in the search for planets outside our solar system. A NASA telescope has detected a slew of planet candidates, more than 1,000 of them, and dozens of those possible planets are in the so-called habitable zone around their stars, where life might exist. NPR's Nell Greenfield-Boyce reports.
The Kepler telescope was launched back in 2009 to try to find planets similar to Earth, rocky, potentially habitable alien worlds. Since then, the telescope has been staring at over 150,000 stars in one small patch of sky. It's looking for the slight dimming in the brightness of stars that could be caused by a passing planet. Today, NASA held a press conference, and William Borucki, the mission's principal investigator, said that in its first 4 months of operation, Kepler found an amazing number of events that could mean a planet is circling a star. The telescope has found 1,235 possible planets, to be precise. The amount of dimming reveals the planet's size, and Borucki says these possible planets come in all sizes.
We see 68 Earth size, 288 super Earth size. We're seeing 662 Neptune size, 165 Jupiter size.
And Borucki says that 54 of the candidates seem to be located in their star's habitable zone, where temperatures are not too hot and not too cold, meaning there could be liquid water.
One of which you can see is smaller than Earth. Four of them are somewhat larger than Earth. They're super Earth size.
A planet this size might be rocky. And the thought of a rocky planet in the habitable zone is the kind of thing that thrills planet hunters. It's the kind of place that ET might call home. Remember, though, that these are all just candidate planets. Doing follow-up observations to show that all these dimming events detected by Kepler are truly planets will take time. Now that NASA has released all this data, researchers can get to work. Deborah Fisher is an astronomer at Yale University. She called this a historic moment.
Kepler has blown the lid off of everything that we know about extrasolar planets. And this week, to me, feels very different than last week did.
NASA officials point out that in the first 15 years of planet hunting from the ground, scientists had managed to find only about 500 planets, mostly big gas balls like Jupiter. Even if not all of Kepler's 1,200 or so possible planets pan out, the orbiting telescope is giving scientists an unprecedented sense of what's out there, and the mission isn't over yet. Nell Greenfield-Boyce, NPR News.
All Things Considered is a production of NPR News, which is solely responsible for its content. Like a story you heard on this or another NPR program? Share it with a friend at npr.org. While there, you can also hear stories you missed, enjoy expanded content, or connect to your favorite member station. This is NPR.
Many Americans who lost their jobs in recent years are looking to replace their lost income with home-based businesses. Think Tupperware, Avon, Pampered Chef. But as NPR's Tamara Keith reports, making real money is real work.
When Cindy Tisdale was laid off from her job as a transaction tax analyst, she started looking for new work right away.
The niche that I'm in tax law is so small that there's hardly any positions anywhere.
Then a former coworker, who also lost her job, started selling jewelry for Silpata Designs. It's a direct sales company where reps hold jewelry parties. Tisdale thought it sounded like a pretty good deal.
I did like, and I love tax law, which sounds really nerdy, you know, because I'm an, you know, my degree's in accounting and statistics. But I'm just like, you know what? Okay, maybe this is a midlife crisis. I don't know, but time to change. I want to do something that's fun.
So on a recent Saturday night, she brought a bunch of catalogs and jewelry samples to a friend's house for a small party. There was wine and cheese and shopping.
I like those. There's rings, a necklace, and bracelet. I believe a bracelet.
Tisdale is still searching for a full-time job, but she's hoping she'll be so successful selling jewelry, she won't need one.
A lot of my faith and hope is on this right now at this point. I feel like I can do this. I know I can do this. This is my dream to, you know, work for myself. This is what it is. I want to work for myself.
There are a lot of newly minted salespeople out there, just like Cindy Tisdale. Silpata CEO Jerry Kelly says his company's sales force has grown by 7,000 since the start of the recession, and many of the new reps were looking to replace lost income.
When you have car payments, when you have mortgage payments, those payments don't wait until you get another job. And the best part about this is you can't be fired.
Silpata says its representatives make an average of $285 per party. With any of these direct-selling, home-based businesses, it's difficult to replace a full-time income, says Neil Offen. He's the president and CEO of the Direct Selling Association, a national trade group.
Anyone who says it's easy is lying. It could be fun, and it could seem easy, but it's not.
Of the more than 16 million people in direct sales in the U.S., he says only about 8% do it full-time. Half of them are making $50,000 a year, and fewer than 1% of direct sales representatives earn $100,000 or more.
To make six figures, or even the $50,000 level, come on, it's going to be hard work. Very hard work.
Or in other words, this isn't a get-rich-quick situation. Gabrielle Schwartz ran up against that reality when she joined a company that sells green home products.
I failed at just getting people to reply on email or phone, or I've met strangers that said they would do appointments and then they cancel when you confirm.
Schwartz lost her job at a St. Louis marketing firm more than 2 years ago when the company downsized. She initially thought this home-based business would be able to replace her old job. Now she's just hoping someday it may be a source of vacation money. Tamara Keith, NPR News, Washington.
The owners of the New York Mets are in the market for a partner with cash. And that's evidently because the principal owner of the Mets, Fred Wilpon, and his brother-in-law and partner, Saul Katz, are being sued. They're being sued because of their involvement with Bernard Madoff's massive fraud of investors. The trustee, appointed to represent the victims of the Wall Street swindler, is suing Wilpon and Katz to claw back, as they say, some of the money they allegedly made from Madoff's Ponzi scheme. Well, joining us now is Matthew Futterman, who covers sports business for the Wall Street Journal. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And first, do we know how much money the trustee is trying to get from Wilpon and Katz? And if not, why not?
The exact figure we don't know. We can feel very comfortable in saying that he is seeking at least several hundred million dollars.
Because presumably they made that much in profits from their investments with Madoff?
Well, presumably they did make that much in terms of in profits, or they may not see them as profits, but money they put in versus money they withdrew over the years. Irving Picard, the trustee, would see that as profits. But also there are a few other provisions under which he could seek this money. One is money that was withdrawn within 90 days of the fraud being exposed. And the other provision is essentially if Picard feels, and if he can convince a court to feel, that someone like the Wilpons and the Katzes either knew about the fraud or should have known about the fraud, then he can try and claw back a substantial amount of not just the profits they made, but the principal they put in.
How close were the Mets owners with Bernie Madoff?
They were very close. I mean, their families lived on the same part of Long Island. They weren't the closest of friends, but they were the closest of business associates. And certainly, I think Saul Katz, Fred Wilpon's brother-in-law, was actually closer to Bernie Madoff than Fred Wilpon was. But they're incredibly close. And the Mets and the Wilpons, the Katzes, they really used the Madoff accounts as something of a bank account for their businesses, because, you know, your standard bank account would give you 2% interest and Bernie Madoff was giving you 12, 15, 18% interest. Bernie Madoff was the place that could do no wrong. And if you had a business and your money was parked there, that was a great benefit to your business.
Could Mr. Wilpon and Mr. Katz, the Mets owners, would they have a case in saying, claw back our money, we were big losers in the Madoff investments?
Well, they have taken the position that they are victims in this, just like the other hundreds of people who thought they had much more money invested with Madoff than they appear to have had. However, what they're going to have to go up against is, given their close relationship, given the amount of money they're invested, given the sophisticated level at which they were operating their other businesses. I mean, these are large real estate developers in the city of New York. They're going to have to convince, you know, both their counterparts on the other side of the negotiating table and perhaps at some point a judge that they had no idea that this could possibly be going on. And that may be a hard argument to make.
Well, let's say that the Mets owners actually do have to surrender a huge amount of money, couple of $100 million or more. What does that mean to their operation of the baseball team and their need for a partner?
Well, what it means in most immediately is that they need to sell a minority stake in the team in order to raise the cash to make that payment. They've made it clear that they want to keep this a family operation, so we'll take your money, thank you very much, but you're not ultimately going to get control of this business. Now, at the same time, I think a lot of the people who are interested in buying a piece of this, they see a limited partnership as sort of a way into getting their hands ultimately on control of the team, and that's probably where a lot of the negotiations will either move forward or break down over the next several months.
Matthew Futterman, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Matthew Futterman writes about sports business for the Wall Street Journal. He spoke to us from New York.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
News Corp founder Rupert Murdoch joined with officials from Apple today to unveil The Daily. It's the first national news outlet designed from scratch for the iPad. Readers will have to pay 99 cents a week or about $40 a year. NPR's David Folkenflik reports.
Rupert Murdoch was clearly glowing this morning as he spoke to reporters at the Guggenheim Museum, Manhattan's famed shrine to modern art.
New times demand new journalism. Our challenge was to take the best of traditional journalism, competitive, shoe-leather reporting, good editing, a skeptical eye, and combine it with the best of contemporary technology.
Murdoch said he hoped to capitalize on a growing tech-savvy demographic, one that's educated, sophisticated, and presumably affluent. One that doesn't regularly read papers or watch the news, but does consume media more generally.
Readers will enjoy the engaging design of a professionally edited magazine, the immediacy of the web, the original reporting and distinctive voice of a newspaper, as well as stunning photography and high-definition video.
Executives promised The Daily would have verve. One of today's dispatches described Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak's daughter-in-law as being, quote, known for her caramel tresses and pouty lips. That's verve for you. Other articles were crisply written, if largely brief, and the mix was heavy on gossip, entertainment, and sports. Given the conservatism of many of Murdoch's news outlets, new editor Jesse Angelo was asked about The Daily's ideological stance.
We believe in free ideas. We believe in free people. I think people will be interested to hear what we have to say and perhaps surprised.
Readers haven't always been eager to pay for a digital publication, but there's a lot of corporate muscle behind this project, including from Murdoch's own television channels. Fox News and Fox Business Network each carried Murdoch's announcement live for a half hour today, even as violence was erupting on the streets of Cairo. David Folkenflik, NPR News, New York.